WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Sedge Thompson. The show comes from Philadelphia, a city that inspired David Lynch, in fact, still does. He often excoriates the city and says it shaped some of the weird and goofy and horrible images of Eraserhead, Blue Velvet, and Wild at Heart. But the Philadelphia Chamber of Commerce should understand that Lynch lived across the street from the city morgue. The other influence integral to David Lynch's vision is my guest, cinematographer Frederick Elms. Since his 20s, Elms has collaborated with Lynch, creating startling and vivid film images. He's also shot Lynch's Dune and Tim Hunter's River's Edge and Martha Coolidge's Valley Girl. Elms and Lynch just shot some new perfume commercials for Opium and Calvin Klein. The cinematographer is the crew member that actors must trust most because he's the one who shows them to the rest of us. The cinematographer is sometimes called the director of photography. When Fred Elms goes to the movies himself just to watch, he likes to sit in the center, down close, where the image is larger than life and the sound is loud.
My first movie experience was shooting home movies. My dad had a 16mm Bell & Howell camera, and he wasn't afraid to let me use it, and he got me some film, and I took pictures of our vacations. We went to Alaska, and I took some movies of it, and I had a real good time doing it. It really stayed with me. I brought the film home and edited it and put together a movie. Quite an epic, I must say. I'm sure it was over an hour long.
Wait, and what was your reaction when you first saw it up there on the little silver screen of your home?
It was great. I was in awe, I think. I kind of didn't realize that it was so easy. It really had a magical sense to it, and I think I hooked into that right away. I just, you know, I looked at it again, and I had to go back and edit some more, and that really got me started. I couldn't stop after that.
When did you meet up with David Lynch?
I met David Lynch about 20 years ago when I first came to Los Angeles. I shot a film called Eraserhead that David directed, and we've really stayed in touch and shot movies together ever since then. So we were both in our early 20s, and we worked on that film, and we really developed kind of a visual communication style that makes working together with him a real pleasure.
Whenever I see one of David Lynch's movies, I'm struck by the melding of the visuals with the music and the sound effects, and they seem more cohesive than in many other movies. And I wonder, when the two of you are working together, are you conscious of how a mix might go or what might else would be added to a scene?
David and I are always very conscious of where the scene is going and what the outcome is likely to be in the finished film. I mean, you never quite know what all the details are. However, David is pretty easy to talk to about where a scene goes in a film and how it fits and what the music might be for that scene. In fact, we often sit and listen to music before we've even shot the scene. We talk about the mood and the feeling, and that includes the kind of music composition, the overall tone of the scene, whether it's light or dark, the mood that's created by the lighting, as well as the locations and all those other things. So we have a pretty good picture ahead of time. It's, in a way, it's a little like pre-visualizing as much as possible from the written page.
I've noticed in looking at a lot of the David Lynch, Frederick Elms collaborations, a strong use of earth tones, browns and greens and oranges, a lot of sort of dark and unusual color palette. How much of this is incidental to the scene, to what you're just happening to see right there, and how much of it is you go into the movie saying we wanted an earthy look?
Well, I think with David and I, it's not by accident. It's something we've talked out ahead of time. David comes from a painting background and is very, very conscious of colors in the frame, and that's also something I like to be able to control as well. So we're both very conscious of all the colors that are out there. So we really do it by design completely.
In Wild at Heart, what I see is our establishing shots are actually extreme close-ups of a match being lit, a bit of a fingernail. This seems almost to turn the idea of the establishing shot inside out. And is this the function of what you're trying to do?
I never thought about it consciously, but that makes a lot of sense. It really does turn things around. It starts with the very, very closest shot first, closer than you would see, you know, with the human eye, really, because we've really put the close-up lenses on the camera and moved right into it. But we have used it effectively in starting the scene off, and it really acts as little connecting links and connecting elements and kind of, you know, sets a tone for those scenes. So I think you're right. It has done that pretty effectively. It's turned things upside down.
When I saw one of those matches on the screen, which appears as sort of as big as a sequoia in 70 millimeter size, how close was it actually to the lens when you were shooting it?
Well, those match heads were between 2 and 3 inches from the lens. It was a real trick to get them in there, get the camera in that close, and not get burned.
A scene in Wild at Heart that I found especially hard to stomach and always reminds me to floss was looking up into Laura Dern's and William Dafoe's teeth during a scene in which William Dafoe as Peru, Bobby Peru, is sort of threatening her. And filling the wide screen are these two mouths, sort of looking right up into them. Mm-hmm. Where did you have the camera to get that shot?
Well, again, we had it in very, very close to them. I really feel strongly that if we use a normal or a wide-angle lens on the camera and push the camera closer and closer to the actors, that we have a sense of immediacy on the screen, that a telephoto lens really distances the camera and therefore distances the audience from the action a little bit. So whenever I can, I put a little wider lens on and I push right up close. So I think we were, you know, 6 or 8 inches from their mouths. I mean, we were really pushing right in tight there. And I think that's what helps give it some of the power. We really needed the power out of that, and I think we got it pretty well in that scene.
Do the actors then have to stand in an odd position to make room for your camera?
Well, sometimes they do. The actors are real professionals, and they're pretty good at that sort of thing. So they're good at standing in the right position and not moving too much, but moving just a little bit in order to make it sound like seem like convincing action. But there are certain technical limitations, and they really help us out a lot.
What kind of equipment do you favor to help get these effects?
Well, the equipment I use is pretty much standard equipment in the motion picture business. It's available to everyone. There really aren't any trick lenses or trick machinery we use. We often use close-ups in Wild at Heart, and they may be a little bigger than other people's close-ups, but really it's not so hard to do. I think you just have to think of where to put it and what makes sense in the story. It's not really the equipment that does it for you. It's your design going into it.
Mm-hmm. How do you protect your equipment from blood spray and all the gory scenes?
Well, we use lots of plastic. Lots of plastic, Visqueen, and a piece of Lexan in front of the lens, so in case something comes our way, we're shielded from it. We're very careful with the safety aspect, you know, fortunately, it doesn't have to happen too many times in the schedule, so we all get through it okay.
Some of the scenes in Wild at Heart are truly gory, and part of them they're enhanced by, I think, the quality of sound as you hear one character's brains being bashed out. When you shoot these scenes, do you feel any kind of queasiness about them? Or is it just special effects or just a frame shot that you're interested in there?
Yes, I feel a sense of goriness about it. It really is affecting. I think it affects everyone who's sitting there watching the shot. Certainly on one level, I have to deal with how the shot is framed and whether the light is right and whether we're making a shot that cuts into the next part of the scene. However, I always tap into the emotional part of it automatically. It just comes immediately for me, and I think that's part of an indication for me of whether we're getting what David is looking for in the scene.
There's a road scene in which Nicolas Cage is driving with Laura Dern sitting beside him. They're at either side of the car. Windshield wipers are going, and they're roaring down the road. Where were you perched to get this image?
Well, I was in a precarious position. I was out on the hood. So when we do those shots that involve dialogue or close-ups in cars, there's several different ways to go about it, but usually it does involve in some way strapping the camera securely to the hood of the car and then putting some lights out on the hood of the car, and oftentimes putting the operator, that would be me, out on the hood of the car, and then towing the car with a large truck in order to make it safe, so that Nick Cage, the actor, doesn't have to think about driving the car and not running into oncoming traffic, as well as working on acting and doing lines at the same time. So it really is a process. It's something you kind of learn to do, and it it's kind of fun actually shooting cars.
Because you have the wind in your hair.
Right, you have the wind and the rain in some cases.
Comparing two movies that you've shot, one, Blue Velvet, directed by David Lynch, that has lots of color in it, and The River's Edge, directed by Tim Hunter, that has very little. Is this a function of you, the director's point of view, the weather?
Well, it's a function of speaking with the director and finding a style that fits the story. For me, the story really comes first, and I would hate to think that two films I shot looked just the same. I really would try to find a style and a technique to photograph a film that would give it an individual feeling and would really fit. So Tim Hunter and I had conversations about River's Edge that were quite different than my conversations with David Lynch about Blue Velvet and Wild at Heart. So that's the root of the difference in style. It really is a communication with the director about how he or she sees the story.
So the intent in River's Edge was to have a grayer, flatter look of light to it?
Right. Our aim was to make it softer, to make it rather naturalistic, to not have hard, sharp shadows or sharp edges too much, to make it on the cool side, to stay away from sort of warm and friendly things, but to go toward a blue or an overcast feeling whenever we could. So we kept that in mind when we, you know, made the lighting for the scene and chose the locations.
You have a lot of experience through working on The River's Edge and with David Lynch in filming dead people. Is there anything you have to do differently as a cinematographer to film dead people than live people?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. Well, fortunately, they're not really dead.
Right.
You know, fortunately, they really do get up after the shot. I know that the woman who played the body in River's Edge was most convincing, and she had me scared a couple times. And I just don't know how she did it. We were out there shooting in January, and even though it was Los Angeles area, it was darn cold on those you know, dewy mornings, and she just froze out there. But she did a real good job, and I think that, you know, that's what I rely on is someone who knows what they're doing in that position, and also a realistic sense of makeup, a realistic sense of what happens to a body when life passes from it, and what do we get from there?
How do you capture? Do you want to light it differently? I mean, there's the horizontal dead body of the River's Edge, and then there was the dead body actually standing up at one point in Blue Velvet before he toppled over.
Right. It's funny. I think the inspiration is a little different in each case. I know for River's Edge, Tim Hunter had this idea that there are some Edward Weston photographs of nude women that inspired him in placing the body, in finding a spot on the river's bank that felt right to him, And also in not hedging, in not being afraid to show a body naked, because it was such an integral part in the story. So I think his inspiration came from those photographs, and we looked at them together, and that really helped me get a handle on just what direction he was going in. And in that case, it was a matter of making the light feel very natural and very soft, to make her look quite dead. The feeling in Blue Velvet was a little different. It was a very surreal sort of room. It was a scene at the end of the film where you just you're sort of seeing it through the young lead's eyes, but you don't really know what he's seeing. You don't really know what's happened in the room, and you investigate with him as you walk into the room. So that's a kind of a different situation.
You have a reputation for making wonderful-looking films, such as Valley Girl and River's Edge, on relatively small budgets. Is this considered a desirable quality in Hollywood, or would you like to be associated with big-budget productions?
Well, that's a good question. I don't really know, because I haven't done any very, very big-budget productions. I've done the smaller films and feel really good to think that I could make them look in a sort of a cohesive and coherent way on less money. I like the idea of working with certain limitations. I think limitations make you stretch and make you work, for what you do. You know, if you have a scene that takes place in a location and you're in a house and the room is just a little bit too small because you couldn't afford to build the set, you find ways around it that are often more interesting than if you were working on a soundstage with a set where you could take out all the walls and do it like they do in the big movies.
There's a scene in Wild at Heart where people come upon a traffic accident at night in a desert.
Mm-hmm.
So it's completely dark all around.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to get the feeling of the scene just being illuminated by car headlights.
Mm-hmm.
How did you plan that?
Well, that one was actually pretty easy. We knew it had to be dark. I mean, that was the underlying theme of the scene, to make it as dark as we could and still see just enough to make it, you know, a very emotionally wrenching, kind of accident. So we found a big empty stretch of desert road, and it really was empty. I mean, there was just nothing out there at all except for these Joshua trees. So we found a place to put, one big lighting source, and then all the rest of it was really lit from the headlights of the overturned wrecked car. And that, we took our cue from that. If somebody walked out of the light, they got dark, and if they walked back into the light, they got really bright. And that seems to have been the key. I know that's a scene that always gets me, even though I've seen the film a lot of times now. I get a little shiver, every time on that one.
It's a disturbing scene. Much has been made of David Lynch's power to disturb, to frighten, to just be weird. How much of this is your contribution?
Well, I'd like to think that a lot of it is. I of course, that's my ego speaking, but I think that I'm really just a part of it. It's a team effort making a movie, and certainly David is at the helm of the ship, and David is the inspiration for the power of those scenes. However, it takes all of us working together. It takes, me figuring out what the camera does. It takes, a lighting and grip crew to make that all possible. And it also takes, an editing and a sound crew. I sometimes look at Blue Velvet, and there's a very powerful scene where the Dennis Hopper character takes Kyle out for a joyride at night in a car. And it's kind of a horrifying idea to begin with. But the combination of the camera and the kind of spooky lighting and all the darkness in the frame and all the sound really makes it the scene what it is. I think if you watch the scene and turn the sound off, you have a very different impression. So those bits of sound and the driving music and the road noise and so on and so forth really heighten the reality 1,000% or so.
When you have a disagreement with David Lynch, what does it tend to be about?
Well, David and I actually don't usually disagree about too much. We have been working together for quite a while now, and we really have a way of doing it that's it doesn't really involve much disagreement. It involves kind of refining things. David has an idea, and I say, well, you know, what if we did it this way? And he says, no, that's all wrong, but, you know, that's a good idea, and what if we tried, you know, putting one of these in? So it really is it's a matter of give and take. It's not anything clean, hard cut about it. I know there was a scene in Wild at Heart where Nick and Laura are in a motel room at the end of the film, and it's real dark. It's the Texas Motel, and there were things. There was a scene there we rehearsed, and we actually I think we shot a take of it, and it wasn't really coming together. That the scene wasn't sort of rising up and becoming real for David. So David threw us all out of the room and sat there for a little while with the actors and worked it through again and came up with a new variation on it. And then he came to me and said, well, look, Fred, you know, I've got this little variation and it's a little different scene now and it really has a feeling going for it. And the lighting that we did isn't really it's not going to work anymore. So we got to come up with something new. And what I think is, what if we imagined the power went off in the motel and they had to bring in this big fluorescent light, and there's this big fluorescent light in the room, and that's all that there is. That's all that's lighting the scene. And it's got this kind of mood and feeling about it. I don't know what it is. And then I said, well, gee, what if the lighting wasn't, what if the light didn't really work, if it was kind of flickering and it had an odd kind of flicker going on it? And he said, yeah, maybe that's the ticket. So we built this fluorescent light and we set it there by the bed and gave it a little flicker. And, you know, sure enough, it's one of those things that helped give the scene a whole new feeling. It really helped the actors and David bring the scene to a new level.
That's that vertical light to the
right,
side of the bed.
It's that one.
I looked at that, and I thought, I've never seen a light like that in a motel room. What is that?
Well, we built that just for that scene.
Do you have difficulties working with a flicker, with the frames of the film going by? Do you have to time the flicker in any way?
No, actually, we kind of worked it out so that it would look right. I mean, it's a little trick you do, but it's really pretty simple. And we knew that if we could make it look right by eye, that we'd have it on film. And the advantage was that it would help the actors. That the actors, kind of use that as a device to put them in a different space as well.
Do you still make home movies?
I do sometimes. I have a little daughter who's 2.5 years old, and I have the greatest time making videotapes and pictures of her. She's one of the best documented kids around.
Do you get any sort of weird effects in there?
Well, actually, I do. I have this wide-angle lens I like to use. I'm not sure she's going to appreciate that when she gets to be 16 or so, but I'm having a fun time with it now.
Well, I want to thank you very much for coming and being a guest with us on Fresh Air today.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
My guest has been cinematographer Frederick Elms. His new film is Wild at Heart. I'm Sedge Thompson, and this is Fresh Air.